Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hi, and welcome to the podcast. I hope you're well. If you're doing dry January, you'll now be, over 2 weeks in. So well done. And if you've already, you know, kind of let that one go, then get back on the horse. Start again. It's okay. I did a little poster recently about this kind of mid-January thing. Well, it's Blue Monday, isn't it, around this time. And it's the time when all the best laid plans can just completely go to pot, and gym membership falls off, even though you've only taken it 2 weeks ago, and all the resolutions, which I don't believe in anyway, kind of go bad, and all the best laid intentions seem to disappear. So if that's going on for you, don't be disheartened. It's life. It's called life. It's the way it happens. But you can literally re-up, just get back on it, because it's so worth it. Just carry on. Just do it anyway. Just step back in. It doesn't matter if it's, if you started and then stopped, it's completely fine. So thank you to we got some really good feedback from last week's podcast. Just a reminder, if anybody's interested in that unique supplement, I was chatting to Leslie Kenny, really fascinating stuff. If anyone's interested in that unique supplement, then the info is in the show notes. But for a short period of time, there's a 15% discount on that product using the code Janie Lee. That's JaneyLee. And that's in capital letters. So if you're interested in that, the link's at the Sober Club or in the show notes. I've got a really great interview for you today. I think you're going to really enjoy this one. Just before we do that, just a reminder of a few things coming up. You can still download our free ebook, of course. It's called Sobriety Rocks, Top Tips for a Successful Dry January. A collection of pivotal moments and insights from sober coaches. There's a whole bunch of us who are sharing our own story, sharing when the benefits kicked in. It's a question that we're often asked, and what we wish we'd known, and you know what the top tip is now. So even if you've been sober for ages, it's great to get these insights. So if you just go to thesoberclub.com, click on the little icon there of the book, then that takes you through to a page where you can scroll down. You can either get the Kindle version, which I think is £1 something, or the download, which is completely free. I don't even ask for your email. So you've got absolutely nothing to lose. So do that. And in return, if you would go on to Kindle or Amazon and leave us a review, if you like the book, a nice review, then of course we'd really appreciate it. And I've got a few more clips, a few more tips from coaches, audio clips from some of the coaches who shared their insights in the book to share with you today as well. So we'll do that in a while. If you are doing dry Jan, seriously, if it has ended already, literally get back on, but get yourself connected. Seriously, just join us in the Sober Club or whatever works for you, but tell somebody and get connected, because it really is the key to the success. When you go off in your own head, well, you know, that's where you stay, really. All manner of rubbish is spoken to you inside your own head if you're not careful. And do be careful what you say to yourself, because you are listening. You know that, don't you, right? Just a reminder of a few things coming up on thank you for those who came to our Setting Your Intentions workshop, by the way. We had a really good session, and hopefully that enabled a few people to do some letting go of what they no longer needed and focus on what they want for the year ahead. At some point, I'll grab a clip from the session with William as well and share it with everyone, because there's some really interesting insights there into how the brain works and why it is that we say we want to do something and then suddenly we're headed down a different path. And it's almost as though we don't know what's hit us, you know. But the reality is there is always a lead up when you do go against your own commitment, when you do, in inverted commas, relapse, hate that word, but you know what I mean. There's always a lead up to it. It's never instantaneous. There's always been a thought process, even if it's this, you know, that something has triggered you, that's, you know, something from the past that always reminds you of drinking alcohol. There's always a reason. And when we can get a sense of what might be going on for us and we can notice our thoughts, that's when the changes can come about. We have to be able to put the pause in and notice our thoughts is so important. So anyways, thank you to those who came to that. And then in January, another reminder of Andy's event, Andy from After Party, one of our coaches, who I think we've got a little clip from Andy this week, is hosting an event at Love From in Manchester, and that's on Sunday, the 21st of January, and I'm going to be speaking there. Really looking forward to getting up to Manchester again. It's exciting. It's so such a cool place. I love it. So looking forward to being part of that. If you go to thesoberclub.com, click on events, you can click through to get a ticket for Andy's event. I think it starts at 3 o'clock on Sunday, 21st, in the centre of Manchester. And then throwing forward to February, on Sunday, February 25th, constellations, family constellations in York this time. So again, everyone accuses me of being, London bound, but I'm actually getting up country, which is great. So really looking forward to this. It's a very special place. I love York as Manchester, and this venue is very near the station. So if you want to, if you fancy, a day trip to York or a weekend in York, be a very good thing to do. And if you don't know anything about family constellations, I mean, I can't share it all now. It's too complex, but do have a listen back to some of my other interviews that I've done around constellations. I did an interview with Mark Wolin, author of It Didn't Start With You. Fascinating book. I did an interview with Rafe Nowen, who is the trauma expert who I work with on these days. So I co-facilitate. And I've done an interview as well with Carl Dawson. I'm also trained in matrix re-imprinting, and that's along similar lines. So if you want to get a little bit of insight into constellations, also, you might have seen the Netflix program from a while ago, Another Life, I think it was called. So you might have got a bit of a sense of it there. And I think there was a Goop episode that featured family constellations as well, quite a while back. But anyways, you have to come with an open mind. It's really magical work. It's really life-changing. It's very unique. Yeah, I mean, it's been around for years. It's not like it's new, but it really is an amazing opportunity to, well, again, let go of limiting beliefs, let go of stuff that's not serving you. It's also amazing for just changing your perception and this whole idea that you can be the one to break the cycle. You don't have to carry on all these family patterns. Sometimes what comes up in a constellations workshop is the thread of addiction that's run through families literally for generations. And you can literally see the part that alcohol has played in that in the ancestry. It's really fascinating, but you can break the cycle. You really can. And there's something just so powerful about that you're the one, who can make that shift, and you can heal the present, and in so doing, you heal the past and the future. So it really is amazing work. So it's Sunday the 25th of February in York. And again, if you go to thesoberclub.com and click on events, you can grab a ticket for that. Places are limited. The room is only a certain size, but it'd be fantastic to see you there. We will host another one in Hertfordshire at some point, but for now, that's the only one on offer. And then I am also planning another retreat at Champneys, and watch this space for some more special retreat days as well coming up. So all of that is at thesoberclub.com, and click on events. So what should we do first? I think let's share some of these tips from our sober coaches who contributed to the ebook, and then I'll tell you all about my special guest for today. So I just asked these coaches if they would share one top tip for the purposes of this. So, of course, some of the stuff you'll have heard before, but it's good to have a different take on it. And one thing that so often comes up is the whole idea of connection. So let's hear from Jill Mackay and Andy, as in Andy Blackman, After Party.
My top tip is to write down all the surprises that pop up when you stop drinking. Anything, no matter how small. Whether you discover improved sleep, more energy, a taste for mint tea, or a delight of sitting in your local park watching the world go by, pause and enjoy the moment. write it down. Revisit all of these regularly and you'll soon see how your world is opening up. You're giving up nothing when quitting drinking, only gaining.
Hi, I'm Andy from After Party. So yeah, I would say just share your experiences with other people, connect with other people, like from this, like the Sober Club, places like that. Be a sponge for information about alcohol and really use this time to and see it as an opportunity for growth. So try something new that you haven't tried before. Start reading books around alcohol, the effects and all the benefits that it can have long term. I've not met one person who hasn't regretted a period of abstinence. So good luck. Well done. You've totally got it.
Thank you, guys. And now let's hear a couple of tips from Sally McGee and Vicky Larter.
Do you know if you're an extrovert or an introvert? My top tip is to know what naturally gives you energy. If you're an extrovert who prefers to talk things out, or you've been given the gift of gab and have high communication talents, then find a close friend, a support group like the Sober Club, or a partner to help you navigate this month. If you're more of an introvert, grab a journal and a nice cup of tea and spend some time writing. Either way, dedicate some time this month to process what you're experiencing in the way that fits best for your personality type.
My top tip is to find an alcohol-free drink that you like. There are so many options now. Not only are they delicious, but saying cheers with a nice glass of 0% fizz ensures you feel included and stops people asking questions, which I find really helpful.
So don't forget, you can still download the ebook Sobriety Rocks Top Tips for a Successful Dry January if you go to our Find a Coach directory or click on thesoberclub.com and scroll down. You'll see the little picture of the book and you can click on that and go to either Kindle or just a completely free PDF. So my guest this week, this is an unusual one because I only just fairly recently came across Anthony, but then of course it jogged my memory and I suddenly kind of thought, yeah, of course I remember though watching Big Brother. I mean, didn't everyone back in the day? So enjoy this interview. Well, I think this is the first time that I've got to chat to a Big Brother winner on this podcast. I've spoken to lots of them in my Radio 2 days, but I don't think we've met before. Anthony, lovely to chat to you. Anthony Hutton, how are you?
I'm very good, thank you. Yeah, lovely to chat.
Great to connect. So I came across some of the stuff that you're doing, and I thought I have to catch up because you've got such a fascinating background, and I'm sure there's so many things that that we can kind of touch base on, really. But there will be people who are thinking, actually, I can't quite recall who he is. So jog my memory. So take us back. Was it how many years ago now? A long time ago, wasn't it, when you were Big Brothering?
Yeah, so back in 2005,
right?
I won the show. I think back in 2005, it was probably Big Brother was probably at the crest of the wave of it. You know, it was massive at the time. Yeah. I was a huge fan of the show, so to get on the show, it was mind blown. To be honest, I was a little bit starstruck actually when I into the house. I was in awe. It was on such a pedestal for me. So, and I was a young, daft, naive young man back then as well. But in reflection, I mean, I know off camera you kind of asked me, you know, do you mind if we talk about that? And it's absolutely, because it was such a big, you know, a big stage of my life, really.
Yeah, I mean, what was it like actually in the house before we get into the what happened afterwards? What was it really like? Because, you know, I've heard, I mean, over the years I've interviewed in my other role as a radio DJ, you know, I've interviewed lots of celebs who've been on things like Big Brother and been in the jungle. And when you actually hear what really goes on, it's a little bit different to the edited version that we see, isn't it? So what was it like for you?
Well, the whole experience from top to bottom was absolutely, for me personally, unbelievable. Before I even got on the show, they hid me in France for 2 weeks before I got in. When I was with a chaperone, and me and the chaperone got on really well, so we actually had a whale of a time.
Why did that have to happen then?
Because at the time, they never ever wanted the press to know that the contestant who was actually going in the house. It was all a big secret till launch night who would actually go on the show. So they basically hid all of the contestants. And then when I got on, I mean, I relished and loved the whole experience from top to bottom. And the experience actually was like how it's portrayed in terms of Big Brother always stayed in character. I never, ever once spoke to any producer on the side of like any form of instructions or anything. Anytime I spoke to someone in the diary room, it was always Big Brother, and Big Brother always stayed in character, which I thought was quite cool. And then the whole experience again, it was just exactly how it was. It was, we lived in a house with strangers, and they were the only people that I ever seen. And I was in there for nearly 3 months, 79 days, I think I was in.
Oh, wow. And, is it as long as that? My God, I'd forgotten it's that long.
I don't think it's not that long
on the telly,
But back, I mean, you could even watch it 24 hours of the day. I think it was
right. I remember. We used to tune in and watch you guys sleeping.
Yeah.
Bizarre.
But, yeah. And like I said, because I was a big fan of the show and I was over the moon to be there, I just, like, every single day was like Christmas Day to me. I was just like relishing the whole experience, every task I threw myself 100% into. And yeah, I think having that positive mindset and that positive, like, you know, that positive energy, I think that was one of the things that probably helped me win the show, because you know, I was so positive about it.
And did you stay connected with any of the other housemates?
I did a little bit for a period of time. It was such a crazy year, because I was heavily involved in probably the two biggest moments of the show. There was one guy who was a young gay guy who basically formed real strong feelings for me, and obviously I was a heterosexual young man. And then there was a woman who said she was pregnant to me on the show as well. And we didn't even sleep together. So there was two kind of like big kind of controversial storylines that I'm involved in.
And yet they definitely weren't set up.
Oh God, no, absolutely not. No, no. Absolutely not. Mm. Yeah. I mean, I've got nothing to, like, if they were set up, I would say. Are you asking that question because do you think that?
Oh, not necessarily. I'm just saying, you know, with everything I know about TV, you know, I'm interested when you say that you don't, that for you, you know, you, because often when I've interviewed celebs who, particularly if they've been in the jungle or whatever, they often say, look, you know, I mean, it always makes me laugh because they always say, you know, you there is this sense that you are, you forget about the cameras effectively. You do just get on with it and you forget about the cameras. And then they'll say, but then you go over and stand next to a bush and a cameraman will fart from behind the bush. And suddenly you'll remember, oh, shit, yeah, I'm on TV, which always made me laugh. But then you'll hear that lots of people say, you know, there was stuff that was left out that was so important that for them to have made that conscious decision to edit it that way was just really odd. And then they'll say, and there was stuff that was clearly organized and set up. So we know it happens. It's telly, for God's sake. Yeah, so of course it happens, but I don't, I've no inside knowledge as to whether it did in your case.
Yeah. But a pregnancy and a gay like love attraction were two.
It might not necessarily play in their favor, right? That's true.
Yeah, but what was crazy about the pregnancy one, the girl, she didn't tell me that, so she didn't tell me anything. But yet she was going in the diary room and telling the whole nation all of it.
Goodness!
But she said she said that like about 16 hours after the incident had happened, she'd thought she asked for a pregnancy test, and she was such a drama queen. And then, but it didn't fare well for her because the whole nation knew she was lying, and wow. she was really, really badly booed when she came out. But I only found out that information
afterwards. Wow!
With my first interview with Davina McCall.
Yeah.
So I was completely thrown. She was like, so McCausey said she was pregnant to you, and I was like, what?
Like,
oh, I was completely God. Thrown. And yeah. then, like I said, there was a young gay man that was, you know, he was very, it got quite bad how relentless he was in terms of like basically kind of coming on to me, and he was obviously battling with himself because we were friends, mm. but that was a unique experience to go through mm. as well. Mm. But yeah, so to answer your question, I kind of cut off my friendship with the gay guy because he was just too much, and then slowly but surely kind of distanced myself, really, not on purpose, just with there was only a couple of people that I got on with, mm-hmm. and
yeah, sure.
So yeah.
And so when you came out then, I mean, you've spoken publicly about the fact that you obviously made a lot of money. I guess the prize money is, you know, is huge. Yeah. And you've spoken a little bit in the press about how you went a bit nuts for a while and spent it all. So tell us a bit about that period of time.
Yeah. I mean, so it like in reflection, it was the Big Brother experience is a very, very unique, extreme hit of fame. Mm. I always mention it when I do my public speaking. You know, when someone's famous, I don't know if they're an actor or whether yeah. they're a band.
They've spent years working towards it, haven't they?
Yeah, there's that. Yeah, and they'll probably be able to see that gradual, like, oh, wow, like more people are coming to the gig, more people yeah. know about yeah. us. Things yeah. that I'm landing bigger acting roles. Whereas my experience was I lived with my grandparents and my mother yeah. in the north in County Durham, and then basically went in and lived in the Big Brother house for 3 months. Came out to fireworks. The first person wow. I spoke to, the first person I spoke to was Davina McCall, and there was endless amounts of people shouting my name with my name on their posters.
Yeah, and then, so it's totally unreal, isn't it? Totally unreal experience.
Yeah, crazy
for a young guy.
Yeah, mm. and then the you know, I won the £50,000 for my for winning, and then the next day I had seven agents wanting to meet me and sign me up. That right. this was on the Saturday, the day after the Big Brother, the day after winning Big Brother, and then the same day on the Saturday about 12 midday, I'd signed with an agent, and then they'd got me a £200,000 okay photo shoot, and got whisked off in a to go and do a photo shoot in a flash London mansion.
Right.
So that's just the first 2 days.
Yeah.
So the you know, my world completely, you know, yeah. completely changed. And then, you know, I kind of tried to capitalize as much as possible. I certainly deludedly thought, well, hey, this, you know, I'm living the dream here. This is just going to last continuously. This is going to last forever.
Yeah.
And it didn't. And then slowly but surely that fame started to dry up. The money started to dry up. Then it kind of like, I'd moved back to the Northeast. And then it was kind of like, then it was like, you know, I'm actually going to have to get a job here. Like yeah, no money's coming here. But then it was like my ego and my paranoia about being laughed at, about having to get a normal job, because for a long time my title was Anthony from Big Brother. And then that basically kind of like, you know, spiraled yeah. to getting into a really, really, really dark place, turned to alcohol, turned to drugs for escapism. And yeah, so there was definitely a real negative to that fame.
Yeah.
But would I change it? Absolutely not. I wouldn't, because it's carved and shaped the man that I am today, and I've took so many positives, because I am proof that you can really, you know, achieve something high and great, and then you can go rock bottom to the point of suicidal thoughts. But also, I managed to get through it.
Come back from that, yeah. I really appreciate you speaking about it, and you know, obviously, you've done a lot of work, and it's great that you're able to be open about it, because, you know, you're absolutely right. There's that whole ego thing kicks in. It's that, you know, suddenly you're, you know, one moment you're the name on everyone's lips, you know, and the next minute you're a regular guy needing to get a job. And I can absolutely see how difficult that is for young people. You know, you hear about child actors, don't you? And so, typically a very similar thing, you know, suddenly nobody wants them anymore. You know, really, really difficult for your mental health and for your ego. I can absolutely imagine. I mean, did you get yourself into debt, or were you able to be savvy with any of the money?
Yeah, I was like, so I think some of the newspaper articles kind of paint a picture, maybe worse than it was. Mm. I bought a couple of properties with the money that I made. I did get into, this was when I was like in a very, very dark place. I basically missed, I missed quite a few mortgage payments for a house, and that was kind of just piling on. This is when it was, like I said, this was when it was, I was at my really, really worst point. I'd missed mortgage payments. But look, thank God I was lucky. Like I spoke, I end up talking, and that's something that I always say. You know, if you're in a dark place, I say, tell someone you love,
yeah,
and speak to a professional. I had a really supportive family, so once I spoke about it, I basically got love and support, and I also got a bit of financial support, and then once I knew I went and seen a professional, and once I spoke about that, I soon realised that it was very beneficial to talk about it. But I knew that it was actually me who was fundamentally going to have to get myself out of it. It's not going to be a little magic. Oh, you've spoken to someone, and one of the biggest things I've done was I changed. I knew I had to get out of where I was. I needed to. I changed location because I was hanging around with a bad crowd, right. And I got back into the hair industry. I was originally a hairdresser by trade. And once I kind of actively changed things up, then things soon started to build momentum again.
Mm, yeah.
But obviously I was daft. I was daft with the money, but of course I was a young daft 23-year-old lad who came in with a lot of money.
Yeah, sure. Just back on that Big Brother thing just for a moment, because I think people will want me to ask you the question. Do you think that more should be done? Do you think that TV companies should take more responsibility for, you know, people on reality shows? I mean, in recent years, we've seen a lot, haven't we? You know, we've had the whole Caroline Flack thing. There's been a lot around reality shows. What's your view on that, having been part of it? And you know, you weren't exactly left unscathed, let's face it. Is there more that could have been done to support you, do you think?
Yeah, so it was back in 2005. And there was very, very little support. There was something called the care. It was called the care team, and the care team, basically all they'd done was lined up the agents.
Right, right.
And then I met with a psychologist once. There was in reflection, I was just literally kind of just left to fend for myself.
Yeah.
But in their defence, back in 2005, the word mental health, well-being,
people weren't talking about it as much.
No, it wasn't a thing. Like male suicide or suicide, it wasn't that much of a thing. So in their defense, I don't think that we were there as a you know, we just weren't there, to be honest. You know, you've had a couple of cases from Love Island. Obviously, it's getting more and more, and I think we're starting to actively do things, and we're getting more knowledge of it. So I think it is getting better. But from back in 2005, it wasn't really a thing.
Makes sense. Yeah, it does. Yeah. So you turned your life around. You opened your barber shop, Mr. Hutton's, and since then, I guess. And also, you became a keen boxer as well, didn't you?
Yeah. I think I'm having another. My wife thinks I'm a lunatic because I'm 41, but I think I'm having another one.
Oh God.
I love the sport of boxing. I'm a big advocate for. I think everyone should be able to know how to defend themselves.
I think
kind of a martial art or boxing should be like swimming. It's just something that you should be able to do.
No, I was just saying. So is your barbershop, do you still run that?
Yeah, no, I basically had, it was Mr. Hutton's Barbers and Bar. So it was a unique concept. So it was a barbershop of the day, and then it was a cocktail bar on the evening. So I had that for just under 10 years, and I'm trying to think how long I've come out of that business. I've got a little two-year-old, and me and my wife, we've got another one on the way. So it was like the hours that I worked were absolutely insane. I was literally full time, like cutting hair from 8 a.m. And then I was like the cocktail guy as well.
Yeah.
So just my day was from 8 a.m. till 2 a.m. because the bar was, it was like a mini nightclub. So I've come out of that. And opening it was one of the best things that I ever done, and coming out of it is one of the best things I've ever done, because I've got my Saturday nights back now, and it's given me the opportunity to pursue this Never Throw in the Towel project.
Go on to that. Just before we get onto that project, which I really want to talk about, am I right in thinking then that you've also quit drinking or got a different relationship with alcohol?
Yeah, so I'm not teetotal. I'm not teetotal, but I'm not good with alcohol. And when I went and seen a professional and stuff, and I was kind of like talking about the alcohol and the drugs and stuff, it was apparent that, you know, I just shouldn't like drink alcohol, really.
I would argue that no one should.
Yeah.
I would argue that no one's good with alcohol, not because of anything to do with you, but because to do with the fact that it's a drug.
I always mention that as well. I do find it crazy how it completely gets labeled as something else. Where I think, can you imagine if alcohol wasn't out yet?
If it came on the market now,
It came on the market now. It's like, right, there's this drug. It's liquid form.
Exactly.
It makes you lose your memory.
Yeah.
You can go violent. You're sick. Your bad days after it. Yeah. All these things, people would be like.
Yeah, it's linked to 200 different illnesses, including loads of cancers. God knows. I know, you're absolutely right. I don't think it would be legalized for sure.
Yeah. People would be like, I'm not taking that. Yeah.
But you're right, you know, the link between alcohol and mental health, I mean, just not enough people talk about it. So, you know, the fact that when you got, you know, support for what was going on, I'm glad that that did come up. But there are many, many cases when it doesn't. And that's when it frustrates me massively, when people go and they seek help for mental health, for depression, for anxiety, and they're doled out the antidepressants and they're doled out the medication, but no one asks them whether they're drinking. And I've had lots of clients who are given that medication and they're downing a bottle of wine a night.
Oh, no way. Yeah, so that's something that I actually specifically touch on when I do my talks. So, like, men are three times as likely, men three times are like as likely to turn to substance abuse than women. Where when it's a classic. Honestly, I hear it all the time. I'm like, I'm a barber.
Well, I was going to say, as a barber, yeah, exactly. You get to hear what.
To men for a living. I talk to men.
Do you find they really open up to you in the barber's chair then?
Yeah, well, that was the barber chair. Like me being a barber was one of the main things that give me the nudge to start actively doing something about male suicide and men's mental health. I've had quite a few extreme cases. One case where I've actually had a client, a stroke friend, live like at my wife's house, who was on the brink of committing suicide.
Wow. So you find yourself in the role of not just a barber, but effectively a counsellor.
Well, it's one of the key things that really got me into it. So when I had my taste of like being, in a real dark place, it was something that I was very shameful about, embarrassed about, and I kept them cards close to my chest. There was only basically my parents that knew.
What you mean? You didn't want to share how dark the feelings were?
Yeah, I was just embarrassed about. Like,
it's interesting, isn't it? That shame, that stigma.
Yeah.
Even though it is a condition. It isn't, it's not your fault.
Yeah, yeah.
It is interesting how we get that, how that stigma is still around even now, even though more people talk about it.
Yeah, but being a barber was the reason why I started sharing it, because I was doing clients, and then clients started opening up to me in a bad place, and then that gave me the nudge to share with them, well, actually, mate, I've been there myself.
That's when I started
being just open and started sharing it, because I thought, if someone's been there and done it and got through it, those words can be golden to someone in a dark place.
And they might not have told anyone else, literally. They it might have been someone who didn't have a family situation where they could share this, and they may not have been able or willing to go to a doctor or a medical professional. So that is amazing.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I've literally just done a post today on LinkedIn saying, is there a better place for a man to talk than the barber chair?
Yeah, brilliant.
Like, it's just, blokes just naturally talk.
Because you're right, women do tend to talk about their stuff a lot more than men do. And even now, there is still that thing that as you say, that they bottle it up. And I didn't know that statistic that you shared, but it doesn't surprise me that men are much more likely to just turn to to alcohol or drugs or whatever. Well, alcohol is a drug, but you know what I mean.
You've got to do the opposite. You've got. I touch on it. Like when I opened the bar, I just had. I knew that it was a potential absolute complete red flag. So I just now I'm here. Like I became extremely disciplined. I'll to answer your question before. I'll maybe drink a few times a year, if it's over Christmas or an occasion, but it won't just purely on the basis of I don't like it that much. Like I'm not a person who like, oh god, I'm dying for a beer, or it's just that, yeah. But it's a classic thing that we do, especially like I said, especially blokes, where like they're not in a good place, they'll turn to alcohol, and it's hang on a second, worst thing you can do.
Absolutely, yeah. Worst. I still think there's so much more sort of education needed around that link between mental health and alcohol. There really needs to be those links made. So it's fantastic the work you're doing. But so you've got this project called Never Throw in the Towel. Tell us a bit about it then. It's a kind of early stages, yeah?
Yeah, so the Never Throw in the Towel. So the Never Throw in the Towel, that was the final stage, so I'll tell you where it comes from. So basically I got brought up by my grandma and my mom, so I had like two moms, which was absolutely unbelievable. And so I'd done, when my grandma passed away, I'd done my grandma's eulogy. And right at the end of the eulogy, I used the words she never threw in the towel. And that was to describe the way that she dealt with cancer. She got cancer in 2014 and she had such a fighting spirit towards getting cancer. She changed her nutrition. She pretty much went plant-based because she'd done like loads of research, and she was so positive. And she lasted up till 2021 is when she passed. And anyway, after that, I tried to put a positive spin on the eulogy. You know, said everyone, we should all have that attitude that my grandma had. And anyway, after the funeral, a gentleman came up to me who I'd never met, and he was like tears were trickling down his face, and he came up to me and he said, "Thanks so much for that eulogy." He said, "I knew your grandma; she was an absolutely amazing woman." Anyway, on that night, I had a message request on Facebook, and it was from the same man, and he sent me this big long message saying, "Just wanted to share with you that I've been massively struggling with my mental health, and I've been having suicidal thoughts. And your words, that the words that have stuck out to me in your grandma's eulogy, is never throw in the towel, and I'm going to live by that." And it just really hit me, and I basically thought, you know what, I am going to do something about this problem, because I've crossed paths with it too many times. And so I literally just started, I hadn't a clue what I was doing. I just started Googling guest speaking. How can I get into guest speaking on this topic? And randomly, a woman who I'd done pantomime with years ago randomly got in touch with me. She lives in London. She's got a project called the Happy Me Project. Holly Matthews, great woman. She said, "Oh, listen, I've got an event. It's in Newcastle. Obviously, you're local, you know, a local face. Would you mind being on the panel?" And I said, "All right, okay. What's it about?" She went, "Oh, well, like it's a mindset, well-being, mental health, or and I've got like a lot of guest speakers and." And I was like, "Hang on a second." I went, "What, you've got guest speakers?" She went, "Oh, yeah. I went, "Would you mind if I be a guest speaker?" And she was like, "Anyway, what about?" And I said, "Oh, well, about mental health. I'm a barber. I've got..." She went, "Okay, well, what do you want to call your talk?" And it was like, "Never throw in the towel."
Yeah, perfect.
And it's just, and then it's, and it, honestly, it's just snowballed. So there's basically, I've got two, there's two things that I do with the Never Throw in the Towel project. One is I do the guest speaking. I also tie that in with the pop-up barbershop as well, because the pop.
Oh, that's like, cool.
So I'll go into a workplace and I'll do an hour's presentation, stroke talk on men's mental health, suicide.
Yeah.
And then I have a pop-up barbershop, so I'll cut.
Oh, I love it.
So it's kind of like
a great idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I love it.
It really just encourages conversation, and the concept works brilliantly.
Yeah. Fantastic.
And then I've got and then I do a man's retreat where once a month I run it's free to attend, where we get out in nature. There's a brilliant forest not far from where I am, Hamsley Forest. So we go on a walk and talk. I take a boxing session, we do controlled sparring, and then we do breath work. We go all barefoot, we connect with nature, which there's so many health benefits from actually earthing and connecting.
Yeah, totally.
Some people think it's a bit like woo-woo, hippified, but actually there's a lot of science behind it.
Yeah.
Then after we do the breath work, then we do a cold water dip. And again, a lot of so many health benefits from doing cold water therapy. And that's it. And I absolutely love it. There's, I just love it, honestly. You know, when I really feel it's like me calling. Like I've got so much fire in my belly about this project.
Yeah, I love it. It's great. I mean, it really is exactly what's needed. Fantastic. Well done, you. That's really cool. So where can people find out more about the stuff that you do then? Just your social channels, or what's the best place?
So on LinkedIn, Anthony Hutton on LinkedIn, and Anthony Hutton on Instagram, and there's also a Never Throw in the Towel Project Instagram, and then also there's a Never Throw in the Towel Facebook page.
Cool.
As well.
Great.
And then I'm just we're just cooking up a website, but it's just there's a documentary coming about, documentary getting done on it this year, and then I've also just pitched for the book to be
that would be really good, won't it? That would be great. Yeah. You'll have to come back on when the book's out. Fantastic.
Yeah.
And we're going to be meeting because you're speaking at the after party event in Manchester.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to that. Yeah,
it's going to be fantastic.
Yeah. So I actually randomly met Andy on holiday, and it was my now wife. It was our first holiday together. Me and Andy, me and Andy met, and we actually we got really close because we had a few extremely competitive games of table tennis against
each other. Great.
And we've it's cool that we've our paths have crossed again.
Yeah, fantastic. So you're going to be speaking at that event. You're going to be sharing a bit about mental health, and I'm going to be doing a little bit about, I don't know, self-care and sobriety probably. But yeah, I really look forward to it. So that's Sunday 21st of January in Manchester. So we'll actually get to meet. I love it when I actually get to meet podcast guests. Doesn't happen very often.
Oh, right, okay.
So that'd be great. Fantastic. Brilliant. Well, I wish you all the best, Anthony. It's so it's really brilliant hearing about all your work. Thank you for being so open and honest about it. It's really cool that you're able to do that. I think it will really help a lot of guys be maybe a bit more willing to open up. So thank you.
Oh yeah. Oh, thanks so much for having me as well.
Cheers.
Lovely day. Yeah, I look forward to meeting you in person.
Yeah, brilliant. See you then. Thank you.
Cool. Thanks, Janie.
Thanks, Anthony. So you can meet both Anthony and I at the event in Manchester on Sunday, 21st of January with Andy. Go to thesoberclub.com and click on events, and that will link you through to tickets for that event on Sunday, 21st of Jan. Final reminder then, if you're doing Dry January, there is lots and lots and lots of support available. There is our ebook. You can join us in the Sober Club. There is a wealth of information and stuff out there. I wrote a piece that was included in something in the Evening Standard. I mean, pretty much all newspapers have got stuff going on right now about Dry Jan, haven't they? You probably saw the thing about how people are choosing booze because alcohol-free drinks are too expensive. I mean, come on. You know, that's an interesting spin. I mean, yes, mocktails can be expensive. Some alcohol-free drinks are expensive when you consider they don't have alcohol in them. I get that. But what a ridiculous headline. You know, it's enough to turn you to booze just because they're so expensive. I suppose it's a good play on words. But, you know, a huge bottle of cider might be real cheap. But do I want it? I don't think so. But anyways, there's been a lot in the press. And if you don't yet have a copy of my book that came out a couple of years ago, Happy, Healthy, Sober, grab yourself a copy of that. It's currently number 15 in the Amazon chart for biographies by musicians. How funny is that? So I'm literally like one number below Ozzy Osbourne. And a couple above Andrew Ridgeley. So highly amusing. Anyways, grab a copy of that book if you haven't already, because it does cover everything. And we do have a lot of amazing expert contributors in there. There's a foreword by Denise Welsh, and there's just a whole host of well-being advice and information from a whole group of you know, whole host of contributors. So it's not just little me. Don't forget, tell someone you're doing this. If it's early days for you, please have a big hug from me. This is the best thing you will ever do for your health and well-being. Don't let anybody tell you anything different. It really is magical, and you're doing it for you, and trust me, it's worth it. See you next time. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by The Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.